Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Hump day. Woo, woo. What is up, everybody? Welcome into the DMVR Nuggets podcast. Presented as always by DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app. Promo code DMVR whenever you sign up. Keep it up on the screen, Kale. Don't put it down until I comment on it every time. Nine days away until we go to the Mecca of basketball, Sombor, Serbia. Our trip. 9 days away. We depart in 1 week. We arrive in 9 days. I can't wait for it. It's going to be a banger. Stay locked to here. We're going to start announcing more and more of our plans. By the way, Saturday the 20th, we're going to have a big meetup down at the Fortress. We'll let everybody kind of know when and where exactly it's going to be. So if you are in Belgrade or around Belgrade and want to come hang out with your homies, we can't wait to meet all of you. Talk some Nuggets, talk some Serbia, maybe attend Beer Fest together later in the evening. Why not? Guys, today we have a very special show for you. He's already here joining us. You can go ahead and bring him on, Kale. Our special guest today from Bleacher Report and the Hardwood Knox podcast, one of the great basketball podcasts out there, is Dan Favalli. Dan, thanks for taking some time with us today, man.
Oh, no problem. Thank you guys so much for having me.
I actually give you a better title than just, you know, the host of Hardwood Knox, you know, Bleacher Report, but better than that, I will be a true, I would say, Nuggets appreciator, because I'm listening to your show, you know, over these last ones I prepare for this. You are flirting with picking the Denver Nuggets this year. Am I right? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you're kind of flirty. You haven't really done it, but you're like, hey, that might be the wild pick I go with.
Yeah, it's a semi-serious dalliance right now. I don't have to go on that yet, but I'm coming awfully close to doing it.
I think more analysts should do this. Like, I always think of Ethan Strauss back in 2015. He picked the Warriors and everybody thought he was crazy. And then, like, you get to live in infamy, right? He's like, no, I saw it. I've actually asked him about this. For him, he saw the preseason. He was like, in preseason, it wasn't just they were winning. They looked like what they went on to become. And he was like factoring that in with the fact that, you know, there's reasons people are sleeping on him. He went there, but I'm not quite as bullish as you. I think I can see the upside with the Nuggets, but actually picking them, I don't know that they're there yet. They feel more like the, hey, don't be surprised if team, more than the, like, I'm going with them team.
I get that, and I think there's still questions when you're specifically looking at the bench, but when you look at the caliber of players they have coming back to them in Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr., yeah. If you hit on either one of those guys' health and you get continued development from Bones Highland. And then I was, I think, a lot higher than most on the additions of Bruce Brown and KCP. This looks like a roster that's probably the most well-balanced, at least maybe in the top like 7 or 8 that they've had around Nikola Jokic yet.
Agreed.
And you look at the ambiguity in some of the rest of the Western Conference, a lot of those other teams, they're either getting older, they're going to be relying on a lot of youngsters, or they have their own injury questions. This would feel like the year to go out on a limb and say, hey, let's deviate from the Warriors or the healthy Clippers and let's go with the Nuggets there.
That is an interesting question just about the deviation, because this is, I think, the year more than any other where I'm curious to see which favorite. I have four favorites in the West. We'll talk about this a little bit later, but which favorites in the West fall off, if any, and which surprise teams are like, oh, wow, we didn't pick them as one of the top four, but here they are. They look like they can be that. This is the year where I feel like there's more candidates than usual to both rise and fall in ways we don't see. Even aside from the injury portion of this, just there's teams that you're like, I don't know if they're quite as good as they have been in years past and if they can reach those heights. But before we get to that, because you brought up kind of all the topics I wanted to talk about today. Yes, the health of Michael Porter and what to expect, Bones and those guys, but also the fit. But you mentioned something interesting. You thought it was the best core. What prior to this is, in your opinion, was the best core of the Nuggets? You got Jamal, you got Michael Porter, you got Nikola Jokic. Was it Gary Harris, Will Barton, Jeremy Grant? Was it Paul Millsap? Like, what's the combination of players you think was previously the best?
I think it was probably along the lines of when it was like peak Gary Harris time for them. Yeah. We were wondering, oh, is Gary Harris like the next Kawhi Leonard or something like that? That seemed like it was the apex of sort of what that Nuggets team could be. And I think you saw, you know, I was really attracted to them after the Aaron Gordon trade, that initial one. And it's really a shame that we didn't get more than a handful of games to see that core, because we could be talking about that team in an entirely different context. But I think you probably have to go back, for me at least, to just peak Gary Harris, to where I might have been as high on the balance, at least, that the Nuggets core has.
And perhaps that's assumptive, but I would imagine that has a lot to do with Gary's defensive prowess, perimeter defense, something they really haven't had without him, and now, at least on paper, are primed to have maybe more than they ever have with KCP and Bruce Brown.
How do you compare Gary Harris to, let's say, 2018 Gary Harris to Kentavious Caldwell-Pope? How do you compare those two guys?
KCP is definitely more of a heart attack on offense when you look at some of the decisions that he's going to make in transition or off the dribble. But there's like this frenetic discipline about them on defense that I really appreciate with KCP. And I think it sort of flew under the radar a little bit in Washington last year because he kind of played the same position as Bradley Beal. And it's like, can you put KCP at the three? And that's not the perfect fit for him. The Nuggets, I feel like, are better built to sort of slot him where he needs to be. And I might also just have like PTSD from them really just overworking Aaron Gordon on the defensive end.
Right. It's interesting, man. I've heard this a few times. I don't know KCP's game well enough. Like in the Lakers, I feel like when he was with the Lakers and they won a title, I felt like he was pretty disciplined. When I was watching him, obviously, against Denver and in the games that I caught, I feel like he didn't color outside the lines too much. But talking to people, you know, in Washington and around, that's one of the comments they keep saying is he's going to take some shots you don't like. He's going to dribble too much. And I just don't have that in that brain. But that's a concern you have for him as well?
I wouldn't say a concern. I think especially when you have an offense that's orchestrated by Nikola Jokic and even Jamal Murray, and you're going to have these guys that want to move off the ball more. But when you look at, the Lakers and even the Wizards specifically, like there were some decisions in like transition, early shot clock opportunities where you can tell he's feeling himself. And I ultimately believe it's worth, if that's the opportunity cost, he's absolutely worth it. But I could see him maybe flourishing in a different type of bandwidth inside this offense when you look at how players work off of Jokic overall. Right.
When he was in that defined role in the Lakers bubble run, and that's the guy a lot of Nuggets fans have in mind.
Right.
And you could argue he was the third most important player on that team, or at least in that series. He seemed to be where he needed to be, hit every open corner three. The defense was there.
Some shots.
But I know when you watch any team across 82, you start to see, the ugly side of any given player or any given team too. So I think maybe for Nuggets fans, we still have that ideal version of him in our heads a little bit.
Is there any chance he's a bad fit in your mind?
I don't see how he's a bad fit unless his shooting falls off a cliff or there's like some really like mobile regression on the defensive end just because he is getting a little bit older. But throughout his career, I know the Pistons kind of flirted with using him as more. He has always been at his best as like this complement to more than one star. And we saw what he can do like in that role with the Lakers. And now you slot him in with Denver and you have Murray, you have Jokic for his inaugural season. I think there's a higher risk assigned to bringing in Bruce Brown pretty substantially than there is to bringing in KCP.
Interesting. And I think when you were talking about one of the things I had a concern about was he was coming in on a contract year, and asking a guy to be a low usage player in a contract year is always tough. But Denver giving him that extension, I always felt like was a little of, hey, if you only average 8 points a game this year, don't worry. Like you're locked up. Your money's secured for a while here. So you can lean into defense and just pick your spots on offense. I mean, that's obviously the idealistic perspective on it, but we'll kind of see how that looks. Let me get into Bruce Brown now. So there's more risk. I think there's more risk because Bruce Brown is a less balanced player, I guess. Like the things he does well are kind of unique and strange, and the things he does not do well are a little bit loud. Is that what you're thinking, or are you thinking more specifically the fit that he'll have in Denver?
No, I think it's just like him being more eccentric on the offensive end, where it's can they use him as a screener or to hang out in the dunker spot? And I think a big part of his success last year was he shot like 1,000,000,000% on wide, wide open threes. Mm. And if that number just slips a significant margin, I do think he becomes a substantially less valuable player to them on the offensive end, or at least a lot harder to fit into what they're trying to do.
Do you think he's going to get better shots this year in Denver playing with Jokic and Murray and them, or last year? I mean, last year when the Nets were fully healthy or even moderately healthy, they're getting wide open shots too because of how good they are in isolation. Where do you think he's going to get the better shot profile?
I think they could be similar, but I would trust the quality of shots in Denver more because it's hard without having seen the Nets like really ever at full strength last year.
Right,
the Nuggets are just inherently more inventive on that end of the ball when you have Jokic and Murray, and even the way they use MPJ, then if you have Kyrie and Kevin Durant and even James Harden, guys that you just want to put the ball in their hands, and there's going to be a lot of idleness from the other players on the court, or go stand in that spot there. I think they'll be a little bit more creative with Bruce Brown, and it wouldn't shock me to see if he just has like a greater share of his looks, or maybe coming directly at the basket because he's able to score off movement.
Yeah. By the way, I saw a picture with him wearing Nuggets gear, like equipment stuff. I don't know. It's always fun when you see a player for the first time doing workouts and stuff. I don't know where he was. I did hear, I think Wynn was talking to us the other day, a big Nuggets workout took place in Miami over the last week or so, or last couple days. So I know some of the guys, not all the big names. In fact, I don't think any of the big names, but some of the role players, it's just cool to see getting together and working out. And I think Bruce Brown was a part of that group. I'm excited for Bruce Brown. We're going to get into MPJ here in a second, but before we get into the specifics there, to me, Bruce Brown represents Denver now has an all-defensive lineup around Murray and Jokic. Like, Murray and Jokic, you're going to close every game with those guys, you know, come playoffs. But now you can go KCP, Bruce Brown, Aaron Gordon if you need to. We have a whole season to work through this. How often do you think they're going to need to go to that trio instead of Michael Porter in a playoffs? And then when you're talking about the Nuggets being a title contender, a true contender, are you picturing that with Michael Porter closing against these great teams in a conference semis, you know, conference finals, whatever? Or are you picturing Bruce Brown out there?
I'm probably picturing Bruce Brown out there, but there's sort of a caveat of, and I think you and I had discussed this over a year ago now, Michael Porter Jr. was quite like a defensive playmaker for the Nuggets.
Right, yeah.
And before he has that injury. And so if he goes back to that level where you can trust him in those situations, that it not only gives you more variety to how you run your rotations at the end of games, but that's just like a player that the other contenders don't have when you're looking at their top two players right now. And so yeah. I think that could be a big part of it. But right now, knowing just the iffiness with his health, his back, and then I don't know how that's going to impact his mobility on defense and capacity to make plays, I do sort of envision that their best closing unit is going to be, as you mentioned, just all defense with Jamal Murray and Jokic.
And it's funny, man, because I'm with you on the Michael Porter defensive playmaking. The thing that's interesting, if you think back to the bubble, in the bubble lead up, the eight games that you were leading up, Denver played Utah. In fact, I think they played him right before they played him in the playoffs, like a game before or two games before that. And if I recall, Michael Porter was dominant in the game. Defensively, you didn't notice him because they weren't targeting him. Then you get to the playoffs, and immediately it's like, hey, we're going to target him every play. And it was such a big contrast between regular season and postseason and how it operates. And that's why the Michael Porter question is so weird. Michael Porter could have the best defensive rating on the team next year. It's just possible that it so happens that when he's on the court, he is doing exactly what you're talking about. He's sharing the court with good players, you know, good defensive players. And it's like, man, when he's out there, he completes the puzzle. But then when you get to a playoffs, they just run different action where they're targeting every time. And you're like, well, now it's an issue.
But again, that's the beauty of the offseason in theory on paper. We just watched the Warriors go through this with Jordan Poole. And it's like, look, we'll just close with Gary Payton. And that's
right.
Just gives you best chance to win. I do think Dan made a good point. And to me, it's the, you know, among one of the many tragedies and Porter's missed time, when he plays, he gets better.
Right.
When he's on the court,
so true.
His playmaking was trending up. I thought his defense, particularly within the context of post-Aaron Gordon trade, looked a little better. So you just miss out on these time. And that's probably, I mean, you want him to be healthy for so many reasons, but all regular season so that when they get to the playoffs, you feel as many of those questions have been answered as possible.
Here's a tough, a fun one, I think, Dan, for you. Who's the most interesting Nugget this season?
Oh, God. I probably would just gravitate towards Bone Highland because I'm pretty much in love with him.
Yeah.
Us too.
I could also see it, though, being, I don't know if this is quietly or not, Zeke Nagy, just sort of looking at their front court rotation off the bench. And I want to see as little as DeAndre Jordan as possible, but that's probably going to dictate that you can get away with some Nagy at the 5 minutes. Can he rebound better? Or if Green and Nagy are your front court there. So I could see him, maybe not interesting, but being this huge swing piece. But Bones Highland is just like, I don't know that people appreciate enough. This is someone who is way more than just like found money in the draft. Like this is a guy,
wow.
Look at what he does on offense. It feels like he is cornerstone material. I'm not saying, they need to get rid of Jamal Murray or Michael Porter Jr. To make way for Bones, but that is the type of ceiling that he has. And I feel fairly confident in saying that given what he was able to do last year, even some of the, what was that, game four against Golden State, he just has that stretch where he's absolutely carving them up, I think it was. That is just like, you don't see that happen on that stage from a rookie like that. And he's so crafty on offense that I will forever just be gravitating towards him to watch him.
Those playoff moments in particular are important because, as you're mentioning, those are like the teams are locked in. They kind of know where the strengths and weaknesses are. And it's funny, Jokic was great in games 3, 4, and 5 of that series. He needed one other person to be great, and Bones was that, and they won that game. Like, if any other player was great in any of those other games, they probably get the win. Bones shows up in that one, and that pushes him over. Obviously, Jamal Murray will take on the main role where you expect him to be great more often than not in a playoff series. But Bones doing it his rookie year is important. Statistically, is there some, or not even statistically, is there some skill that gives you this confidence in him? Is it his three-point shooting? Is it his passing? Like, what is it that makes you think he's a star in the making, not just a good player?
I think the two things that stand out is, and it's a small sample size, but he shot like 46%+ on unassisted threes after the All-Star break last year. And you just saw hints of like what he could do off the dribble there. And then it really is just his live dribble decision-making. When you look at some of the passes he's thrown, just the angles that he uses. I think he's someone where you could look at it, he was about league average for his position at finishing around the rim. If you told me he's eventually someone who's shooting like, you know, I could quibble about some of his takeoff points, but if you told me he was someone that's shooting like 67, 68% around the rim eventually, he is just so good with the hesitations, the changes in direction and speeds. That is, it feels like, the biggest aspect to star success in today's NBA is we want that, not just the shot creation and making, but the ability to be able to elevate the players around him. And I see that when you just look at his decision-making off the dribble.
What do you think his role is going to be this year? Because with Jamal kind of hobbled, at least, you know, to start, you're not going to, I don't think Mike Malone's even come out and said, expect 20 to 30 minutes from Jamal for the first, you know, X amount of weeks, maybe months. So do you, I mean, is he a guy that you could see playing 30 minutes a night, earning 30 minutes a night, just being like, hey, we got to play this guy. We're good when he's on the court. Can you see him being that this year?
I would think so. And I mean, I think the biggest factor here is Jamal Murray. It's like, if he's going to be sitting back to backs and he's going to be on a minutes cap to start the season, Bones Highland becomes a necessity for at least half the year then. And then maybe if Jamal Murray is Jamal Murray by that point, do you get into some tricky decisions where can we try playing them together? What would that look like defensively? Who needs to be on the court for that? So maybe you see Bones' minutes get slashed there. But specifically early on, it wouldn't shock me if this is someone who, and maybe it's because he ends up starting some games too when Murray isn't playing, but if he ends up being like at the forefront, one of those names in the sixth man of the year discussion.
Man, we were talking about his odds, and the odds are like really good for him on DraftKings. Like, I think it was plus 5,000 or something for sixth man of the year.
That was for most improved.
Oh, that was most improved. Yeah, oh, they were still like
a second year player.
They were still pretty high for you know, for sixth man. And I'm with you. Like, that always goes to a score. Well, we think he's going to score, and it usually goes to a player that comes off the bench but plays a lot of minutes anyway, and that'll be him. So there's a chance he's an 20 point per game scorer off the bench, even though he's playing 30 minutes. One of the things I like about the Nuggets, they have a defensive lineup now. We just discussed it, but they have some crazy offensive lineups, and I don't know if we'll ever see them. But if you wanted to throw Jamal Murray, Bones Highland, Michael Porter, and Jokic on the court together, I just feel like that's one of those fun lineups. That could be a Warriors-esque death lineup with Jordan Poole, where you're like, you can't run it in the playoffs all the time. You can't run it in every situation, but against some teams, it's going to be a knockout blow in the third quarter. Do you think we'll see those types of lineups, and do you see it the same way, as bad as it might be on defense?
I would pay obscene amounts of money to see that lineup in high volume. I don't know if we would. I mean, you would have the better feel for this. Is like Michael Malone going to be pro seeing that lineup? It would probably be come down to, well, what does that look like defensively? Who's your fifth? I guess it's Aaron Gordon or KCP there. I would need to see what it looks like defensively, but I could see Michael Malone maybe like not wanting to play that lineup really ever.
Sticking with that same kind of theme, defensively, Bones Highland, what level of concern do you have? Do you have any concerns? Because he's a guy who on some level has a long way to go. On the other, utilizes that length so well. So I guess how do you see him sort of going into that sophomore year on the defensive side?
I guess I don't have strong feelings there. I could see him being a little bit more of a disruptor. Like you said, you mentioned his length. I don't know if he's going to get significantly stronger between the end of last season and this season, but he could learn. Look, when Jamal Murray got injured, like, we had seen some of the better defensive stretches of his career, right? Because he's just so tough and can be so strong. And that's not like, you know, people don't know Jamal Murray for his defense, but if you're just looking at Bones Highland for someone to learn from or watch to see how he's able to play at least through semi-consistent spurts when he's not necessarily like the biggest guy on the court, even though he's like a fine size for his position, that's not the worst spot for him to be in. But I don't view Bones as just someone that you're going to be able to move around or completely erase on defense. Like, he's better than just a traffic cone on that end for sure.
Right. Yeah. What about floor for Bones this year? Like, healthy. I mean, obviously, let's just assume health, but what's the downside in your mind for him?
is that if they do sort of gravitate towards, like, are we talking about someone who's playing less than 18 minutes a game all of a sudden because you have Jamal Murray, Michael Porter Jr., and his role sort of gets capped by that? We could see his efficiency from three definitely regress for sure, but if they end up being a team that's trying to cater more to their defensive lineups, I could see certainly by the middle of the year, if both MPJ and Jamal Murray are healthy, maybe he's someone that falls by the wayside a little bit in that rotation.
NBA seasons, especially for teams like Denver that are not naturally great at defensively, like they're always going to be more of an offensive team, I think, in the Jokic era. But teams, they go through this rhythm. First month of the season, defense locked in. Middle 3-4 months of the season, it's like just, you know, you're coasting. You're almost relying on your offense. And then you lock back in at the end of the year. The Nuggets have done this almost every single season in the Jokic era. And I kind of wonder if this season will mirror that a little bit. And if that's the case, you know, maybe Bones is fewer minutes, but come December, January, February, you just got, if you can win with 120 points, just do it. Just stack up some wins and get to the postseason. I think it might follow a little bit of that trajectory, but we'll have to wait and see. On the other side, let's take a quick break here, Dan. On the other side, to me, the most interesting nugget is Michael Porter. And I think because he represents to me the widest range of outcomes. Sure. I think Bones is right there. I think it's a good answer. Michael Porter, you could easily do. But to me, Michael Porter's the one that I'm just like, I have no idea what to expect, but I'm excited. Let's talk about him on the other side.
You know what to expect when you're using DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook. You can expect them to be safe, secure, reliable with your money. You can deposit, withdraw it whenever you want. And you know there are a lot of opportunities to win money. Right now, new customers can get a risk-free bet up to $1,000. Just make that first bet up to $1,000, and if it doesn't hit, you'll get another shot at a big win.
Do you have a bet in on Bones?
No, I haven't been in on the Denver Nuggets.
You have a bet in on, I have one on the Nuggets.
I have a very large bet.
Yeah, I have one on the Nuggets too. I'm a fool.
I've got a bet on Bones to win six, man.
Oh, you do?
I do.
You got it in? All right.
Whether it's futures, same game parlay, spreads, money lines, there are so many ways to play, so many ways to win when you're playing with DraftKings Sportsbook. So sign up now, use promo code DNVR when you download it. Must be 21 or older. Colorado only, new customers only, minimum $5 deposit, risk-free bet paid out in the form of non-withdrawable free bet token, max $1,000. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Let's talk about our friends at Green Mountain Dental Group, longtime partners and friends of this pod. And
my teeth are so clean right now.
If you're a longtime friend of this pod, you know all about them. And you know we've had several listeners switch over to the Green Mountain Dental Group full time. Why? It's because they're the best damn family-owned dentist in the metro. And they're extreme Colorado sports fans, just like you, just like me, just like all of us here at DNVR. Skip the awkward sports talk and talk about how dope Jokic is while they clean your teeth. By the way, if you get a cleaning, x-ray, and exam, you receive a free Sonicare toothbrush. What a deal. Chances are you haven't been to the dentist in way too long, so hit up Green Mountain Dental.
You know who we really need to get a sponsor? Your barber.
You like that?
Who is it?
That cut?
Who is it?
I don't want to.
You don't want to get, because it's your secret? Spot. It's your spot. You don't want it to get overrun.
Times are available when I like them. You know?
Really?
I'm like Paul Klee fishing. No one gets to come with me, and no one gets to know where
secret spot.
Where I do it.
I do have to tell everybody that this Saturday, our very first tailgate is going on. Denver Broncos, Dallas Cowboys. It's preseason, but you know what? A tailgate, it doesn't know if it's preseason, regular season, or postseason. The vibes are still there.
That's right.
The food is still there. The drinks are still there. What do we have? It's a taco truck. No, not a taco truck. Is it a burger truck?
Slider. Mile High Sliders. Mile High Sliders. There, and you get as many as you want with your ticket.
How many sliders do you think you could eat?
That's some good social content, but probably 10.
10 sliders?
I think I can eat 10.
I think the food I could eat the most of is sushi. I love sushi.
Sushi's amazing.
Sushi is so good.
Michelle doesn't like sushi.
Oh, that's a...
I should probably...
That's a tough one.
Leave her.
All right, we're back here with Dan Favalli, Bleach Report, Hardwood Knox podcast, a fantastic... little insight. Miroslav's favorite podcast.
I know. They've done pods together.
Number one, well above DNVR Nuggets. We just talked Bones Highland. Let's get to Michael Porter here. Huge mystery. There was a debate, somewhat of a debate last night with Tony Jones, who's going to be on the show, by the way, tomorrow, about whether or not Michael Porter is an elite shooter. I am very much like, there's one thing I'm confident about Michael Porter. It's that he is an elite shooter. I think he's like a top five shooter in the NBA. If you just talk about making shots, where do you fall on this, Dan, about do you buy Michael Porter as one of the league's best shooters?
I will say I saw that trickling throughout my timeline late on East Coast time, right. The argument of Mike Porter. I was like, this is peak NBA Twitter.
So true.
I think he's definitely an elite shooter. I don't know where I would rank him, but you know, when you're talking about specifically comparing him to Klay Thompson, like, yeah, you go with someone who has the larger track record. Sure. Okay, fine. But Michael Porter Jr. is just, he's in that vein to me when you look at the way he scores. And I think, look, Adam, you've said this multiple times on podcasts I've listened to. He's just someone who within the flow of an ecosystem can stumble his way into like 25, 27 points per game because of how lethal of a shooter he is. And I think that's the best way to describe it. And it's not just someone who's able, look, his size matters and his ability, if he's ever able to create for himself even better than we've seen, but it's really just the catch and shoot stuff, the off movement stuff. Like, he is to me, like, yeah, clearly one of the elite shooters in the game right now when he's healthy, obviously.
And really is, it's funny, the scoring part is what's interesting here, because I only buy his shooting. Like, that's the one thing that I think is like NBA elite level talent. There's the other part about how well do you move off ball? Like, comparing him to Klay Thompson, Klay Thompson is among the best all time at just reading a free flow offense and finding where he's supposed to be to get open shots. And Michael Porter, I think, is pretty good at this, but he's not nowhere close to Klay Thompson's level. Obviously, the defense, like, there's all these other things as basketball players. But I even think as a scorer, that's the thing, is Michael Porter's such a good shooter, but he also just, he doesn't have great moves, but he gets to the basket. He finds offensive rebounds.
He's not that strong, but he finishes around and over so many guys.
And so the upside for him, tell me if you agree with this. I would not be surprised if Michael Porter was the second leading scorer next year. I'm not predicting it, but I just would not in any way be surprised if that happened for the Nuggets.
I guess I wouldn't be surprised. I kind of assumed, I guess, that they would treat him with kid gloves more than they would Jamal Murray coming back. And so you get into the question of how much does he play and does that impact his scoring average at all? But, I mean, he's certainly someone just because he scores so much within the flow. It wouldn't shock me if he's their number two scorer.
He scores outside the flow too, which is part of like the frustration about him is sometimes you're like, what are you doing? And he still gets, you know, some numbers up. It's interesting your point about the kid gloves. We don't really know. And this is what's difficult. I think Michael Porter was likely had a green light to play and do some things prior to Jamal, but the injury certainly is one that's more mysterious and more, you know, third back surgery. So I don't know. And the Nuggets haven't really said. They've talked about Jamal and the slow ramp up. We really don't know if there's going to be a slow ramp up or if this is just one of those things where it's like he's 100%. Until he's not, and then he's 0%. And we don't know if there makes sense to.
I think that's a big part of it. I think also that perspective is the right one on how they got to that injury without people necessarily knowing. Like,
right.
Porter's back, I don't know if that's something you can just sort of manage. Like, you took the risk when you drafted him, and I think the risk of things going wrong are sort of always there.
That's certainly how it seems. That it's not like obviously, I don't think you want to run him into the ground. I wouldn't be surprised he doesn't play back-to-backs, those types of things.
Sure.
But it does seem like he got hurt. There wasn't an incident, so he wasn't overworked when he got hurt.
He's going to try to play basketball at some point in his life, and we'll see how it goes.
You know? What do you see as his ceiling, though, for this coming season, Dan?
Ooh, his ceiling? I mean, I feel like we could probably talk about him in a similar vein as we were when he got the contract extension, like fringe all-star, especially if you're envisioning a scenario where, hey, maybe he's the number two scorer on the Nuggets, but just the efficiency with which he's able to score and then all the different ways, of course, you mentioned that he can score. That is just something that is, you know, borderline unprecedented when you go back and look at his numbers from 2020, 2021. So I wouldn't put him in the All-Star conversation, but it feels like he could be very much on the outskirts of that if everything goes according to plan for him.
I think so too. The floor, I mean, obviously the floor for him is injury and he just doesn't play, but let's say if he's healthy, what do you see his floor as? He plays 65 games next year. What do you see his floor as?
I think probably someone who is not in their most important lineups might be his actual.
Interesting.
Good point.
If he's just so bad on defense, or they don't need his offense, if it's somehow superfluous and they need to lean into defense, maybe he's the player that they close games at the expense of, or even just have some of their best lineups to close halves or in higher leverage games that he's just not a part of.
This is an interesting question then, because you mentioned, do they need his offense? And this is a thing I keep thinking. When Jokic and Aaron Gordon were on the court last year, just those two, with the hodgepodge of guys that were around them, I think they had a 122 offensive rating. It's sometimes you look at a number and you just go, are they really going to be better? Yes, they're going to have better offensive players. Is there any concern at all that Jokic is 99% of this, and as good as those guys are, they matter in the playoffs, they matter in the certain specific moments, but in the regular season, they might be the same caliber offensive team next year?
I would think they would have to still be better just by virtue of the non-Jokic minutes, I think would be a big deal.
Yeah,
and they elevate the actual Jokic minutes. you know, you're throwing out 122 with him and Aaron Gordon on the court. I mean, look, if Jamal Murray and just the synergy that he has with Jokic and how good of a player he was, it wouldn't shock me if we're talking about, like, there are some heavily used Nuggets lineups that are approaching 128, 129, 130 offensive rating. So I do think they have the capacity to get better. But to your point, maybe it's more so in a playoff setting, right, or just looking at how they navigate the minutes when, you know, the, you know, between 10 and 15 minutes a game that Jokic is on the bench.
There is in basketball, like, you're a 123 offensive rating against 90% of teams and situations, but you're like a 110 against the other 10%, versus maybe you're a 122, but there's nothing you can do about it. Like, there's a solve for everything. And that might be what Murray and Porter represent.
Yeah.
That it's still really good. Like, number one type, you know, five-man lineups is what you're putting out there, but it's not necessarily the high peak that you expect. It just never gets solved.
We saw in fourth quarters and in playoffs last year, there was a particular type of defense that was deployed and effective. And I think the value in having the aggregate offensive talent back is there's just more ways to attack. And you can't just have one game plan for the Nuggets with all those guys out.
And Dan, one of the stats I'd pulled out in 2 years together, basically all the minutes that Murray, Porter, and Jokic have shared the court together, the Nuggets offensive rating is 126.4. And it's a good sample size. It's like 1,000 minutes. Not a huge one, but those three guys at 126.4, that is example. And that's before you get to Aaron Gordon, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Bones Highland, whatever other combinations. Those three guys, 126.4, is higher than KD, Steph, and Clay. So I don't know. I'm optimistic, too, that they're going to have some major peaks. Here's a fun one. What do you expect of Jokic this year? I think we all just kind of assume that he's peaked, but is there any chance that 2022-23 is his best season yet?
I would say why not? Not to quote Russell Westbrook there, but just like, you have better talent around him, and so some of his responsibilities get more streamlined. Or is it something as simple as last season's version of Jokic, who shoots 38% from beyond the arc rather than 33.5 or whatever he was at? Maybe the scoring dips a little bit, but we see like the Nuggets are capitalizing on his passes more, so his assists go up. And so I do think that there's a chance we see an even better, or at least somehow even more efficient version of Jokic, even though I think he like never missed inside the arc last year. Just, and the shots that he takes there too. It's kind of hard to fathom, but at this point, when he's still firmly in his prime, I wouldn't dare like put a ceiling on him right now.
He's 27. Like, most players statistically peak at 27, 28. Like, I think you might have a little bit of a better years later on in your career, but statistically they don't. And I keep penciling in Jokic for a mild regression. And the more I think about it, the more I'm like, maybe it's not. Maybe he's just a better player now than ever. And he has more weapons, more spacing, all of these different things that are going to take him to a new level.
I mean, I think the only conceivable regression is just in terms of counting stats, because there are more options. But like Dan said, and if that's how it works out, you can probably expect him to somehow be even more efficient.
Ogi Stojakovic, a Nuggets assistant coach, was just on with the fellas at Nuggets Serbia, including Miroslav. And I know one of the quotes he said was, it had something to do with, like, we know that Jokic is going to have to carry early or something like that, which is kind of funny. We think Jokic's been carrying him for so long. Maybe he eases into this season. Maybe it's the opposite, and we get the best Jokic in October, November, December. Mm-hmm. And maybe there's a little bit of a January swoon. Who knows?
Be fine. Honestly, if it means he doesn't have to play Hercules to get this team past the play-in,
yeah,
I'll take a little, yeah, take January a little swoon,
a little lull. Yeah. Here's the next question for you. How do you personally compare Jamal Murray, really what you saw in the trajectory he was on prior to the injury? How do you compare him to Devin Booker, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Donovan Mitchell, De'Aaron Fox, and Ja Morant? To me, those are the great next generation players. You got Damian Lillard and Steph Curry, of course. But those are the other guards: Booker, Shai, Mitchell, Fox, and Ja. Where's Murray to you? Is he in that club? Is he below it, above it? Where's he at?
If De'Aaron Fox is in that club, Jamal Murray is certainly in that club. I'm a De'Aaron Fox truther. I think I would put him right in the Ja, Shai, Devin Booker. Like, that's someone who could work his way up to there. And I'm not even trying to be too rosy about him. Just when we look at how he was playing before his injury, and even some of the postseason moments he had had to that point, this is just someone who is so good on offense. And the fact that he's able to sort of toggle between different existences, when you look at having to play off Jokic and even the way they incorporated Michael Porter Jr., plus running stuff himself, that's not something that if you look at Shea or even De'Aaron Fox or even John Morant in Memphis, that's not something those guys have had to do. Devin Booker's needed to do it in Phoenix. And so I find value in scalability and variability. And like Jamal Murray has already shown that he can do that. And so if he's going to stay healthy, I see no reason why he wouldn't be mentioned in the same breath as those guys.
And then Donovan Mitchell, you didn't mention, but I assume you just meant him, all those guys kind of jumbled in the same tier.
Yeah, he's like more De'Aaron Fox-ish to me right now. We're like, I am so certain if Murray stays healthy, I'm going to have Jamal Murray over Donovan Mitchell. And that's not to say Donovan Mitchell can't get better, but the defensive regression there from him over the past like 2 years has been very real. And I do think the playmaking improvement for him has been uninspiring. I don't know if that's a function of what was happening in Utah, but a healthy Jamal Murray to me, and maybe it's not so much this season because, as you mentioned multiple times, the slow ramp up, but sort of projecting forward, I would have him comfortably ahead of Donovan Mitchell.
I want to real quickly get why you like Zeke Nnaji, because I really like him too.
That's how I knew you were in the
weeds. That's how you
know. when I heard that you're really into the Nuggets, and then you said Zeke Nnaji as your most interesting player, I was like, yeah, he's...
What is it you like about him?
He's in there.
I'm a sucker for anyone who like bigs who are going to stretch the floor, and his stroke just seems so real. And then there's something I find interesting about when you look at someone who's your profile as a big, but I trust him to defend on the perimeter more than I do to protect the basket. Yeah. And maybe it's a morbid fascination, but I'm fascinated by those types of guys. And I do actually think that he probably deserves a little bit more responsibility on the back line defensively this season. And maybe that's just a function of, I don't want to see DeAndre Jordan ever for this team. but that's why I've just been so curious with him and the way that he plays on offense, and then how he's sort of this idiosyncratic defensive player. I think there's still like improvement to come from him. And I'm very interested to see, and you guys obviously have a better hold on this than me, just what type of role he has and how much agency or leeway rather he's given this season.
I think Zeke's been a better performer than people realize in his like tenure in Denver. Like I actually think, I think part of this is he had such a horrible summer league that it's like tainted, you know, the perspective,
and it doesn't, hurt too.
And then he got hurt. But I don't think any of those things actually matter. He just does the things that he's supposed to do when he's out there, and he has done them to a higher level. But when you get to the point the Nuggets are at, it's more about what are sure things, and he's not a sure thing.
Right.
As much as I can have faith in him, he's still largely a mystery, and I'm going more off of what I expect, project for him going forward than necessarily what I'm certain he'll do.
But this is a good year to circle him, because if there's a year where he gets or seizes that opportunity, it's probably this. And I would just say that Malone has said definitively that they view Zeke as a four, or at least he does. Just an educated early guess, it's probably Jeff Green playing the five, if not DeAndre Jordan. But yeah, a partnership featuring those two.
Real quick, so I want to get your perspective on the West here. We were looking at the best starting lineups earlier this week or late last week, the best starting lineups in the West. I think the contenders for the best are also the contenders for the four best teams. Golden State, Phoenix, Denver, and the Clippers. How would you rank those teams in terms of best starting five? And let's talk about in April, assuming you've had health and Murray and Porter have had a full season under their belt to kind of get their legs under them. How would you rank those teams in terms of best starting fives?
I think I'd probably have the Clippers at one, with the Nuggets at two, the Warriors at three. And then who's the fourth team?
Phoenix.
Phoenix.
They have a great starting five too.
Yeah, I'd probably have Phoenix at three and then Golden State at four.
What is it? So Golden State, you almost believe more in their like core three guys and their ability to just mix the right role players around them given the circumstance, but not necessarily like Kevon Looney and whoever. I guess Andrew Wiggins would be the other guy. He's been great, though.
I think there's still just a distrust between Andrew Wiggins and I and how I view his performance. And so that, look, Kevon Looney, you know, I can't believe they were able to keep him at the number they were able to keep him at. And I have no qualms about that front court with Draymond and Kevon. But when you are going to rely on like Klay Thompson and Andrew Wiggins still as your primary wing defenders, there's just going to be that healthy dose of skepticism there for me.
Give me your ranking for, just give me like the top six teams or so out West to you in the regular season. How do you think the standings will shake out?
In exact order.
putting you on the spot. This is early. It's subject to change, of course.
Right. I would probably put the Clippers at one, but that might actually be stupid because of how many rest nights you know they're going to have. But I'd have the Clippers. I think the Nuggets floor, if they're healthy, is probably the two or the three. And so I'm just going to throw them in at the two.
Okay.
I'll put Golden State in at three, just based off the sum of their parts. Phoenix at four. I'm extremely high on the Minnesota Timberwolves as a regular season team.
Okay.
So I'll put them at five. And I am getting fairly close to saying some reckless things about the New Orleans Pelicans this season.
I heard this on one of your shows, yeah.
We'll slot them in at number six.
Wow, the Pelicans would be the team.
If they're healthy, they could be really, really their peaks last year, like where they finished once they figured out who they were, yeah. They looked like a very competitive team.
And then you got teams like Dallas in the play-in, Memphis in the play-in. You know, if it shakes out that way, this just shows you how ridiculous the West is.
That's the biggest takeaway. Memphis is really interesting. Everyone wanted to celebrate and credit what they did as it was happening last season. And yet, like, sort of projecting to
nobody,
this season.
Yeah, you're right.
No one's really too comfortable giving them some big
so
leap.
True.
And part of it is Clippers Nuggets coming back, you know, but it's an interesting team.
It is. We've asked this of a lot of people, and a lot of people are pretty low on Memphis. So
they bet. It feels like they bet a little too much on their internal development based off what they did after last year. Like, to have to think that Zaire Williams is going to, you know, take the leap this year and then almost need David Roddy or Jake LaRavia to be a part of your rotation immediately. It just feels like, especially with the Jaren Jackson Jr. injury looming there, it just feels like, and look, this is coming from someone who's now been wrong three straight years on the Grizzlies, so this should probably be number four, but that's probably why I think a lot of people are overlooking them.
Is there what about the Lakers? Are they going to be a disaster? Is there any chance LeBron just rallies them to one last run?
I think it just comes down to, are they going to trade Russell Westbrook or not? Because I've seen it's not even just can they get Kyrie for him or Miles Turner and Buddy Hield. I've seen people think that if they just told him to take the ball and go home, they'd be better off. They need to turn that salary spot into people that actually fill the rotation, because right. Like that's how much they invested in the top. And so they would be a team I'd be a lot higher on if they make a Russell Westbrook trade. But where they stand right now, I'd probably have them ticketed for play-in territory.
Was there not enough made, though, of the fact that a lot of their top end talent did not spend a lot of time together on the court? I mean, did we just never see the Lakers, or do you feel like you know what you've seen?
I won't say that I feel like I know what I've seen, because I'm pretty stupid, but I think we saw enough to know that, like, if Anthony Davis and LeBron were just healthy, okay, maybe they might have been like the sixth or seventh best team in the West, but like it was going to be nothing like they envisioned it being. And the right. biggest flaw and just the downfall for them is when you have to justify a trade by saying, imagine what Russell Westbrook can do when one of the greatest basketball players of all time isn't on the court. Like, you've done something wrong if that's how you're sort of envisioning that trade working out.
Right. Dan, always incredibly insightful and great perspective, man. Thank you so much for all of this. You got me. You might be talking me into bones, which is crazy because I thought I was already talked into bones.
I thought we were high.
I know, but here we are getting even more talked into bones.
I'm glad that I could talk you a little bit more into bones. I think you might have been the one that initially talked me into bones last year, so I'm happy to return the favor.
Thanks so much. Anything you want to plug before you get out of here?
Nope, you hit it all. Just check me out on Hardwood Knox, or my stuff is always at Bleacher Report.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks so much, Dan. Have a great day, man.
Great stuff.
You as well. Take care, guys.
Let's take a break on the other side. Stan Kroenke spoke for like the first time ever, perhaps?
I was thinking, did I know what his voice sounded like?
Isn't it crazy how little he talks and then he gets down there and talks? And I actually found it to be a pretty compelling interview. We're going to talk about as today in the Denver Business Journal, there was an update about the Kroenke's developmental plans. We'll talk about that, too.
Breckenridge Brewery is the official beer of DNVR. They're also just our good friends, and they have a sweet Nuggets-themed beer. It's called the Mile High City Copper Lager. That sleek blue can with the new Nuggets logo. Well, it's not new anymore. With that Nuggets logo right on there. You can't miss it once you see it. If you don't know where to look for it, try the Breck Beer Locator. It's my favorite tool. I tell it where I live, what kind of Breck beer I want, and it tells me exactly where to go. You should check it out sometime and try out that Mile High City Copper Lager. Remember, Breckenridge Brewery is the official beer of DNVR. Ivaca TV is also a good friend of DNVR because they're the new goat in Colorado sports, the greatest of all TV. Ivaca TV delivers amped up sports coverage for Colorado sports fans, featuring Altitude Sports, AT&T Sportsnet, and NFL Network. Get the most regional sports for less and just skip out on the billionaire slap fight. You still have access to your favorite teams with Ivaca, and it all comes in crystal clear HD while using less bandwidth. It's only $25 a month plus a $5 receiver fee, but right now Colorado sports fans can get $10 off per month for the first 3 months. To score that deal, you go to ivaca.tv/colorado10. That's ivaca.tv/colorado10. Turn your home into the ultimate game viewing zone with Ivaca. gets the people going. It gets the Nuggets back on your TV.
All right, we're back here. Final segment, DNVR Nuggets podcast. 9 days until we arrive in Serbia. Some great interviews lined up with some fantastic guests. You guys are going to be excited when we get to when you get to see some of this. We also we found out we arrived during Beer Fest, which you don't have to know what it is. It's Beer Fest in Serbia. Our first two nights, we're going to be at Beer Fest.
I somehow, like, I think I fist pumped and sighed at the same time. I was like,
yeah. It looks to be great. We've met up with so many people. People have reached out to us. People that have been listening to the show. We're going to be doing a tour of the city from a professional tour guide. I'm very excited about. Shouts to Goran. Can't wait to meet him. He's going to take us around different places and give us a private tour as we land. We've got, you know, some great stuff going on with regards to, you know, Jokic and learning more about him and some great guides. So I'm just so excited for it. We're excited to bring you guys along. We're going to have more content that 1 week we're in Serbia than we probably have had in the last 3 months. So stay tuned. You're not going to want to miss what's going on. And in the meantime, you see the shirt down there in the lower corner. That's the shirt that we're selling. That every penny of profit from that one goes to supporting and helping finance this big trip. So get in, help us out. We appreciate it.
There's being a Nuggets fan. There's being a DNVR Nuggets fan. This is just that Vince McMahon meme. There's being in the club by rocking D-Line's custom designs. And then there's being in the club inside the club.
Bottle
in
service. The back of the little club. Bottle service.
Bottle service with Serbian folk music playing.
Yeah.
That's where you want to be.
That's where you want to be. Get the shirt. So yesterday, at an announcement or an event, Rob Walton, it's officially voted in. He's officially the richest owner in professional sports here in the U.S., $65 billion, something like that, like such an absurd amount, richer than like the bottom 20 owners combined or something. Absolutely absurd.
The next richest owner has a net worth of $17 billion, and he's estimated between 65 and 70.
Wow.
It's wild.
So he's three, maybe four times richer than the second richest owner in the NFL, which is hilarious. Also, you know, connected, obviously, Stan Kroenke, married Ann Walton. So the Waltons and the Kroenkes have been doing business, as Stan Kroenke mentioned yesterday, for five decades. Five decades he has known Rob Walton and worked very closely with him on some things. So, there's a weird like, yeah, heck yeah. But then you're like, wait, what?
Yeah, yeah. Condoleezza Rice.
She's in on it too. Which, by the way, like, there's a lot of just like people that can get things done inside the Broncos
this
organization.
Is true.
So
I mean, look,
you can joke about Condoleezza Rice, but guess what? That gives you access to like getting things done, pressuring people into getting things done.
Look, you said this once, and it's the right way to, I think, view this particular thing. Like, your sports owner is gonna be a billionaire,
of course.
So they can be a poor one, or they could be a particularly rich one within that context. And I guess the latter's cooler. That's a lot of money.
Here's the thing, though, that I think is actually more interesting is that, first of all, Stan Kroenke spoke to the media, which I just had. You were joking about it, but it's real. We don't hear Stan talk almost ever.
Ever.
So the fact when you do hear his voice, I was with you. I've heard it before, but I kind of forgot what he sounded like. That's how seldomly he speaks. But I want to say this. I actually really enjoyed the interview he did, brief as it may have been. I thought, unprompted, he brought up the Denver Nuggets and talked about, hey, like, you can build the best team. You don't always win, and that's professional sports. We have always had long-term visions, which is something when Josh spoke to the media, my biggest takeaway was, I feel like I better understand the Kroenke way than ever before. Whether you agree or disagree with what it is, I at least understand the perspective. And one thing that I do give the Kroenkes, I do think that part of why all of their teams are good right now is because they've had very long visions. Have they been too long or whatever? You could debate that if you want to. But I think that they are people that plan extremely long term, which should give you a little bit of comfort here in Denver. We know that the team is locked up for, I think, another like 15 years or something. But it should give you pause that some of the things that we're going to discuss coming up are things that are like, hey, we're planning for the next 30 years, not the next five.
Right. And there's also a little bit of culmination going on right now in terms of the success they're seeing in their teams. And I was talking recently with Harrison about how NBA players feel particularly outside right now. Sort of the Kroenkes, just visible. First of all, we heard Stan, so that's a thing. But just seeing and hearing from them, and I think there is this, there's probably momentum even on the ownership level right now. I mean, the Avs, the Rams. I've been saying this. They want to strike while the iron is hot. And so we're hearing and we're seeing from them. I think there are plenty of valid criticisms that go their way, but their teams are succeeding right now. And we saw him, and then we'll get to this, but the Business Journal plans drop for what's to come for the Nuggets. It's massive. It does feel like Josh and Stan are excited right now, as they should be, about the Denver Nuggets.
The last decade, if you really look at the Kroenkes, it's been slow builds for the Avs and Nuggets.
Yeah.
And it's been like the developmental build for the Rams. Like, that's where they've been putting all their money in. It's led some people to say, do they care more about the Rams than they care about anyone else? I have no idea. I will say, Stan Kroenke, again, we're playing body language doctor here.
Yeah.
Kind of lit up when he talked about the Nuggets. Little twinkle in his eye when he got to the Nuggets, just talking about, like, hey, man, we got this great team over here. I was, like, looking at it. I was kind of like, you think I didn't do the, like, film study where I'm like, hold on, let me see.
No, I know
like.
You did. I mean, considering the baseline is silent James Bond villain.
Yeah.
Just even an eyebrow raising feels like some emotion.
I'm just saying, he was at a Broncos event, and he brought up, you know, his excitement for the Denver Nuggets here. So I want to put that in there. But more to the point. You now have two of the richest owner in all of sports. One that's significantly more rich than the other, but still, Stan's not he's not pinching pennies. He's not hurting for money. He also has more than average money for an NBA owner. And you have this big plan. There's been talks about, are the football stadium going to get moved out to DIA? Is it going to be way out there? This or that? And last night, it just gave me a little bit of hope. And even reading in the Business Journal today, one of the lines in here was this new thing that they are building. The hope is, or one of the hopes is, that it connects the three major stadiums. You're talking about the Rockies, the Broncos, and the Avs and Nuggets. And to me, I always think cities are coolest when those things are connected in some way, and they don't have to be right next to each other.
Right.
Sometimes that can actually be bad when they're too close, because then it's like that whole area just becomes like, you know, becomes too unique. But the whole idea of this development, if I read it off here, it's going to be 12 million square feet of residential, retail, office, hotel, education, and open space.
Parks, right?
Parks. Yeah, yeah. So it's almost like, it almost sounds like a giant McGregor Square that they're trying to build now next to River Mile, which is a separate development. I think they also are connected to in some capacity, but another one next to that. The point is, the plans here are grandiose. They're not small, like we're just going to put up something here. It's an all-encompassing thing. Roughly 40% of it looks like new residential units, 6,729 new residential units, which, by the way, being a real estate guy, I don't know if you guys know this, I did it for a long time, dense urban housing is very important. So it's actually kind of cool that they're going to build this many new places downtown. Obviously, they'll probably be pretty high-end places, but it's just good to see that there's so many people. Not moving them deeper into the burbs, but having this is a good thing for the city.
Yeah, exactly.
Retail buildings, and then, yes, like a giant bike path that goes all the way through the middle of it that, again, connects. You can get to, what is it called? Dick's Sporting Goods. What is the one now? No, it's, what's the name of the football stadium now?
Empower Field.
I always forget Empower. I've followed him for like so many sponsors. Now I'm lost. Empower Field, Ball Arena, and even a little bit more of a jump to get over to Coors Field. I just think it's such a...
Oh, I love it, man. To me, the sports stadiums are the beating hearts of the downtown area.
Correct.
And I actually think in some ways they feel, as close as they are, maybe a little too segregated. Like, I think changing the flow of that and sort of building it around those three things is really exciting in terms of a revitalized or reimagined downtown. But I agree with you. My single biggest takeaway was that line about the idea of connecting these places and what that implies about no stadiums going anywhere. You know, obviously we know he knows Rob very well. As you just said, 5 decades they've known each other. So if, as mentioned in these big grandiose development plans, if a part of it is Broncos Stadium being right there, it's a good sign. Right. It's a good sign. And I'm glad they understand that, because I just think there's nothing better for a city than having downtown sports arenas. It's my favorite thing.
That proposed trail, the 5280 trail, passed right through the development. And the development, I don't know if it's being called this or they're just referring it to it here, but the Wine Coop Promenade.
Wine Coop Promenade. It sounds nice.
Does sound nice, doesn't it? And it sounds like actually Denver, too. It would have been weird if it was called like the Kroenke Square.
I mean, I know people
something like that
have all kinds of reactions to change, particularly in the realm of development. But some of this, to me, sounds very exciting. These are parts of downtown that could use changing the flow of it. To me, is a very exciting kind of thing.
12% of it new open space, public open space, which would be cool. Yeah, again, cool. Just making it a cool part. So again, just cool to see. Like we talked about this a while back. Why aren't there plans for the, you know, the training facility? Maybe these things aren't connected. But my theory was that the development is so much bigger than just this thing, it's that it involves all of this. And I have a sense that that's what we're getting at here. So I don't know. Like it's a little thing. We'll see it when it. It's probably going to take a decade, maybe more.
Yeah.
It's going to be a long-term project, but there is something cool about, like, hey, we heard from Stan, and this plan seemed very forward-thinking and long-term for the city. Might as well be slightly optimistic, I guess, about it.
Yeah, sure, keeping everything right where it is. I love that.
Yeah, exactly. The Nuggets all the way up in Commerce City would have been a real bummer.
Oh, my God. I have a hard time getting me to go. Just kidding.
All right, that does it. Thanks to our guest, Dan Favalli. Tomorrow, we do have on the show, Tony Jones. Planned it before last night.
He is going trolling
Nuggets fans. But we should have him on the show to talk about the Utah Jazz, as well as why maybe he is a little more skeptical. I honestly think it's semantics. Like, when you believe the same thing, but you call it different things. This is what I think it is. Like, if I say, like, oh, I think Jokic is clutch, and you're like, well, no, he has never been clutch in the finals before. That's clutch. And you're like, whoa, okay, well, I agree. But I think what he does is considered clutch.
Like, and I would project that he would do it. I guess that
I would project
thing,
it,
I think
that
he would
do it
in
those moments. But,
you're
you know,
probably
like,
right.
But
let's
I think
fight about
semantics.
It anyway, though. Let's go.
Let's fight. So it should be good. Don't forget, if you're listening to this and you usually join us live, we are on our alternate YouTube channel and probably will be for at least 1 week. Hopefully this is resolved before we go to Serbia, man. Hopefully, fingers crossed. YouTube, you know, what can I say? They botched. Hit that like button on the way out. We'll see you later.